Meus caros deputados, caríssimas deputadas, nós vamos, entretanto, dar início. Eu apercebi-me que o senhor Oliver Roop acabou de chegar com um voo em atraso, ofereci-lhe um café, então estávamos só a fazer aqui uma pequena pausa. Não sei se alguns dos senhores deputados também desejam algum café, porque a sala tem uma máquina, então não sei se será suficiente para todos, mas... Direitos iguais. Muito bem. Mr. Oliver, are you ready?
Yes.
So I'm just starting with giving you this welcome in English, and then we're going to make the meeting in Portuguese. It's a great honor to receive you here. We are, even with a little bit anxiety, to have this meeting because we re-agend it. It's very important to know from you, especially from you, and I'm going immediately giving you the word. Then we have the possibility of all the parties that integrate this committee to make the questions they want, and then you have the possibility of, as you know, to give a final answer. So if you want to start, please feel you very welcome here with us, okay?
Yes, good morning, honorable member of the parliament, Chairman Faria, dear members of the Portuguese parliament, ladies and gentlemen. Let me first of all thank you and the chairman for the invitation to this meeting. It's a great honor for me to be here with you. It's not the first time that I'm in the Portuguese parliament. Of course, not the first time that I'm in Portugal. I just said a few weeks ago, with different weather, I was still in Cascais. So, but I really like Portugal, and I have to say we enjoyed over the last years a very close relationship always with the parliament, with the government, and therefore I'm really grateful for this great opportunity to participate in this hearing today. I would maybe start by give you some basic information about our committee. I know that, of course, these kind of committees exist in many countries, including Portugal, but there are always some specific points and characters of these committees. And our committee, the European Economic and Social Committee, is one of the oldest committee which is enshrined in the treaties. And I think it's one of the less known bodies in the European Union, but nevertheless, I think it's a key one when it comes to organized civil society and to social partners. So we are actually the body who is an advisory body to the EU institutions, to the Commission, to the Parliament, and to the Council, and we represent organized civil society. So our representatives come from the social partners, from the work trade union organizations, from the employers' organizations, and from organized civil society, including consumers' organization, agriculture, environmental organizations, and so on. So we were established by the treaties more than 65 years ago, and our members are appointed by the Council on the suggestion or proposal of the national governments, but then appointed by the Council. And I would say our key work, when I say we are an advisory body, is to elaborate opinions on almost all EU initiatives that we have. We work here in close cooperation with the institutions. We go to the European Parliament, we present our opinions, we work on amendments together with the rapporteurs and with all the political groups in the European Parliament. But we have also more and more a forward-looking component in our work. So it's not only that we comment on proposals, but we try also to set up and to propose strategic initiatives, often in cooperation with the institutions. For instance, the council presidencies, the rotating council presidencies, they ask us for exploratory opinions, which means actually for policy initiatives. And here, this is a strategic opportunity for our committee. We used this in the past, also with the Portuguese presidency, but also with the Belgian and recent Spanish presidency, where we presented exploratory opinions, which were then discussed in the council at ministerial meetings with the ministers. And I'm glad to say that some of these exploratory opinions found their way in the recommendations and conclusions of the European Council or of the different council formations. So I think there is a certain impact. I will come later to some examples. For example, when it comes to the Blue Deal, we were the first institution asking for a consistent water strategy for Europe. I don't say this because it's raining today, but I think we all know that water in all its from all the angles, water is an important issue in all the countries. So we ask for a Blue Deal, but I will come back to this a bit later. When I took office more than 1 year ago, I tried to change this committee a bit and to open it, to open the doors and to make it more inclusive. Because one criticism that we faced were that our 329 members cannot represent the whole organized civil society across Europe. This is not possible. So my idea was to make this committee more open, more inclusive, and to transform it in a convening space for civil society organizations. So this we tried on several occasions. We have, for example, a liaison group where organizations like Transparency International, but also other organizations, are members, so they can also raise their voice. Or if it comes to UN conferences, like now the Summit of the Future, for example, where we participated, we invited organizations from outside the committee to contribute to our work, and we contribute then with our opinions or with our position papers also to the UN conferences. We have some other roles that I would briefly like to mention. We also assume a facilitator role for the emerging European citizens initiatives. We participate in the European Circular Economy Stakeholder Platform, and we contribute also to the European semester cycle. We monitor, for example, the implementation of national plans for recovery and resilience, and what I just said, we represent organized civil society at UN bodies. And this is quite new. Before, we didn't play really a role here, but now there is an agreement with the European Commission that we are part of the EU delegation when it comes, for example, to the HLPF, the High Level Political Forum, it's on the implementation of the Sustainable Development Goals, or if we talk about the, just recently, the Summit of the Future, but also the EU Commission on the Status of Women, all these delegations. Here we are part of the EU delegation. So we are not only visitors, we are really part of Team Europe. And I think this is also a good role model. And I see that at international level, many continents are really seeing the EU as a role model, as an inclusive model, because we cannot see any other region where social partners and civil society are really included in the delegations. And even if we are never satisfied, of course, and we ask for more involvement and for stronger dialogue and consultation, I think we made a significant progress. And I would really highlight this and appreciate this approach of the European Commission and the European Parliament. So this is definitely an important point. We cooperate, as I said, with the three institutions, with the European Parliament. We just recently concluded a new cooperation agreement, which gives us the possibility to present our opinions in the respective commissions in the European Parliament, to work very closely with the rapporteurs. I said with the rotating council presidencies, also here is a very close relationship. And once again, we are invited to almost all informal ministerial meetings when it comes to cohesion policy, to social policy, employment policy. So we have some areas. We are still working to be involved also in other policy areas, but it is already a good step. And as I said, we have the opportunity to present our opinions there. Just to give you here an example, I will come later back to this, but cohesion policy is a key topic for our committee. Here we worked also with Commissioner Ferreira quite closely, and we drafted several opinions on the future of cohesion policy, and we were invited to present it to all the ministers there. And I think this was especially important, as we could see that there was some pressure on cohesion policy to reduce the significance of cohesion policy, and even the question if there should be a commissioner, dedicated commissioner responsible for cohesion policy, was not clear. So we adopted the resolution just in our one of our last plenary meetings, where we said we insist on a cohesion commissioner, because we think this is really the main investment policy in Europe, and for the sake of social and economic convergence, we see that cohesion policy is absolutely essential. So this is one example. Another one was during the Spanish presidency. I think we had more than 20 exploratory opinions on different topics, but including the question of collective bargaining, democracy at work, so more participative economic systems. We had a lot of opportunities to present our opinions to the Council. And last but not least, also with the Commission, as I said, the cooperation is very closely. Also here we have a cooperation agreement, and every year we send our proposals for the work program, our comments for the work program of the European Commission. So also here is a close relationship, but this depends very much on the respective commissioner. With some commissioners we have extremely close relationship, for example in the last years with Nicola Schmidt, Elisa Ferreira, but also with the Vice President Switzer. So across political parties, I would say, we can see that there is a willingness, a growing willingness from them to work together with the ESC. And once again, I just can say with Portugal, we have a really good tradition of close cooperation with the presidencies. But I still remember the Porto Social Summit, which was a crucial moment where our committee was also invited, and also in the Porto Social Forum, so in the follow-up of this summit. So I just can say in our committee, all Portuguese governments have really high appreciation and high respect for the inclusive approach and to work with us. I just wanted to give you a few points, what I tried during this mandate, because the mandate is only 2.5 years, in our house. The total mandate is 5 years, but every 2.5 years we have a rotation between the groups. So I come from the trade union group, and when I took office, I saw that some of you have also the manifesto in front of you. We tried to set up some flagship initiatives, and the first one was really to open this committee, to make it more visible, to increase the impact of our committee. The second point was to foster youth involvement. We were already champions before. We worked very closely with the European Youth Forum and with other youth organizations. And now we are the first institution that applies the EU Youth Test, which means that youth organizations are involved in our daily work, even if they are not members in our house. And I would say the most important flagship initiative was, because it's already in the phase of implementation, is to involve candidate countries. We could see that with the war against Ukraine, the question of enlargement got a new momentum. So not only Ukraine, but also the Western Balkan countries, we could see that we let them too long in the waiting room alone, actually. We could see that there is a growing frustration in these countries. So our idea was that we are the first institution that involve and include these all candidate countries in our work. Was not an easy exercise, but with the help of the Commission, the External Action Service, we appointed around 140 new members from candidate countries, which means from trade unions, from employers' organizations, from NGOs, and they are now working alongside our members on selected opinions. So this was, I would say, was a landmark decision, because there's no other EU institution that works already with candidate countries. And so we had the pleasure to welcome a couple of prime ministers, the prime minister of Montenegro, the prime minister of Albania, also from Moldova, who came to our committee, and of course they use our committee also as a first institution where they have really, I would say, the foot in the door. And for us, the reason why we did this is not to accelerate accession procedures, because this is not up to us. Enlargement must be merit-based and predictable. But I think we should not make the mistakes from the past, where we enlarged our European Union, and I think with good reasons, but we have not prepared the countries. We can see that some of the Central and Eastern European countries now are struggling with the rule of law. They are struggling with fundamental rights. They are struggling also with social dialogue and collective bargaining. We have countries where we have even not 10% of the employees who are covered by collective bargaining. So we said, let's start now in these countries. So this is actually the reason why we involved them, to show them the benefits of an EU membership, a future EU membership, but also to strengthen structures of civil society and of social partners already now in these countries. So I would say this is one of the most important initiatives in this mandate, and this is accompanied by another initiative because we are also, or we understand ourselves as a watchdog for fundamental rights and the rule of law. We have a dedicated group, and over the last mandate we visited all EU member states to test really on the ground how is the civic space, how is the situation for human rights, for social partners. And now we are doing this also in the candidate countries. So we had already a mission to Moldova, and very soon we will go to Serbia, where we will have also one of these missions. It's in parallel with the European Commission, because the European Commission is also extending their rule of law report to candidate countries. And maybe finishing the first round, and then I understand that we will have some questions and comments. I just wanted to say that before the elections, and now before the new commission is in place, the new parliament is in place, we also set up a resolution, a long resolution, with our main demands to the new commission, to the new European Parliament. And this is actually touching upon a lot of policy issues. But we said we want really a Europe that protects people against internal risks, which means after the pandemic, health, demographic change, poverty, but we will also make sure that Europe helps to realize an accessible and universal social protection and well-being across Europe. We are also talking about competitiveness. So we have our employers group, and I think they are right to have a concept of sustainable competitiveness. So we are also supporting many parts of the recent reports of Enrico Letta and of Mario Draghi. Maybe not everything, but I think especially when we look to Mario Draghi, he reminds us that we have a huge gap and lack of investments in Europe. I think this is the main reason for this lack of competitiveness. He's speaking about 800 billion euros per year in private investments. So I think this is a number we can hardly realize only at national level. I think Europe must play a role here and must also help to facilitate these investments, especially in countries which are not able to do these investments. So we are working on an opinion on this, and we are working also very closely with Enrico Letta and also with Mario Draghi. And and finishing by the new commission, or let's say by the commission designate, we read, of course, the mission letters. I think we can support a lot of initiatives from, and a lot of mission letters from von der Leyen to the different commissioners. I would highlight, maybe we can come back later to this, but we would highlight that there are now two commissioners or portfolios for commissioners that we have asked for. This is first of all for water. We have now a commissioner who has water resilience in his portfolio. This was a demand of our committee. And a dedicated commissioner for housing. I will come back later to this as well, but housing, I think, is also one of the crucial concerns in all member states, in all member states. We can see this. I myself could attend the ministerial meeting for affordable housing, and there was not one country where they said, well, in our country, the situation is quite easy and relaxed. Everybody said we have an issue with affordable housing and social housing. So therefore, we ask for an action plan. and for a commissioner who should really be responsible for this. And I'm glad to see that now we have this commissioner for housing. So this is very positive. On the other hand side, we see also a focus on competitiveness, on defense, on security. And I think it's understandable when we see this lack of growth and of competitiveness in many countries. We see the war of aggression. And I think it's only right if also Europe joins forces. But we should not forget that also the social Europe, where we made a lot of progress in the last years, should not be forgotten. And I'm a bit worried that we don't have a commissioner who has the title for social affairs and employment anymore. Now the title is preparedness, people, and skills. I think this is the title. Of course, we will not stick to titles. It's important what happens, but I'm a bit worried that the ambitious plan of the previous commission or the current commission to move forward also with concrete proposals in the field of social Europe, that this will slow down. And I think we should not allow this. I just can say that our organizations that we consulted are absolutely clear. They want a Europe that cares about, of course, a strong economy, also a strong defense, but also a strong social Europe. And this is actually what we are asking for also in our resolution. I would have a lot of other points, but I will stop here. Once again, thank you for the opportunity, and I look forward to the debate with you. Thank you.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Presidente. Estou certo que esta sua primeira intervenção já disputou nos excelentíssimos deputados, que eu gostaria de enaltecer a expressiva participação de deputados hoje nesta reunião, o que me parece que está naturalmente relacionado com o interesse que esta matéria e a sua vinda aqui a este Parlamento lhes desperta. E, portanto, eu quero também vos saudar a todos os deputados por estarem expressivamente hoje aqui e terem diante de vós a oportunidade de colocar as questões. E nós vamos começar esse debate, digamos, com a possibilidade de fazerem as questões que entenderem com o representante do Partido Socialista, depois do PSD, Chega, Iniciativa Liberal, Bloco de Esquerda e Livre. Cada partido terá 4 minutos e depois haverá a possibilidade de resposta com 24 minutos por parte do Sr. Presidente do SES. E, portanto, eu dou a palavra ao Grupo Parlamentar do Partido Socialista para dar início a esta parte da nossa reunião. Senhora Deputada Ana Sofia Antunes, tem a palavra.
Muito obrigada, Sr. Presidente. Desde já começar por agradecer muito a presença do Sr. Presidente do Conselho Económico-Social Europeu nesta nossa comissão, Dr. Oliver Rock, e dizer-lhe que nos identificamos fortemente com aquelas que foram as prioridades por si estabelecidas para o seu mandato enquanto presidente deste importante conselho. Não apenas porque entendemos que na fase que atravessamos, efetivamente, na Europa, fortalecer a nossa democracia, seja ela do ponto de vista interno, seja através da mensagem que com essa reforço da democracia interna passamos para fora, é fundamental. Também na importância que confere à diversificação de representantes no próprio Conselho, não apenas dos representantes dos empregadores, dos trabalhadores, mas também no reforço fundamental deste terceiro terço de representantes que representam a sociedade civil. E para nós é fundamental perceber que é dada relevância e força a esta representação, seja dos grupos minoritários, seja de grupos étnicos, seja especificamente, por exemplo, um tema que me é muito caro, das pessoas com deficiência. Vivemos um período, obviamente, exigente do ponto de vista interno na Europa, com ameaças àquelas que são as nossas bases fundamentais, a nossa democracia, os direitos fundamentais, o Estado de Direito. Nessa medida, para nós, é fundamental que consigamos fazer o reforço daquilo que é a nossa visão de uma Europa social. Vimos com alguma preocupação, e gostávamos de colocar isto aqui com alguma transparência, com bastante transparência, que na nova composição da Comissão Europeia tínhamos os temas sociais muito concentrados apenas nas mãos de uma única comissária, a quem reconhecemos todo o valor, não está aí a nossa questão, mas efetivamente ver temas económicos repartidos por 3 e 4 comissários e temas como a defesa do clima, que não deixa de ser fundamental, também repartidos por vários comissários, e ver uma única pasta concentrando os temas sociais, de emprego, das competências e também da educação, que é inédito desde a década de 90 do século passado, é algo que nos preocupa e que nos faz sentir a necessidade de reforçar aquele que foi o nosso compromisso, muito expressamente clarificado na Conferência do Porto, com a aprovação da declaração para o Pilar Europeu dos Direitos Sociais e com a aprovação do Plano de Ação, pelo qual nos continuaremos necessariamente a bater. E, portanto, a questão fundamental que lhe deixava aqui, e também pedindo, digamos aqui assim, a sua visão e a sua orientação sobre esta questão, é como não deixarmos, de facto, cair este tema do reforço do Pilar Europeu dos Direitos Sociais, que tem necessariamente de continuar a ser uma prioridade para nós, europeus, numa vertente de paralelismo com aquelas que são as questões económicas do mercado interno e do reforço democrático e político da Europa. Eu não sei se ainda resta tempo.
Ainda tem uns segundos. Assim muito rapidamente, não é? Senhor Deputado Paulo Pisco.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Presidente.
Como estamos mesmo em cima do tempo, eu pedi-lhe...
Muito, muito brevemente, gostaria apenas de colocar duas questões. Uma delas sobre a forma como encara as desigualdades na Europa, uma vez que cerca de 10% têm cerca de 70% da riqueza na Europa, isso gera grandes desigualdades, não apenas entre os países mais ricos, mas mesmo dentro de muitos dos países que fazem parte da União Europeia. E a segunda questão, também muito brevemente, tem a ver com o papel que devem ter os migrantes, as pessoas que vêm de países terceiros da União Europeia e que são fundamentais para o desenvolvimento económico e social e que, por vezes, encontram muitas dificuldades e cada vez mais dificuldades, muito particularmente por causa da pressão que a extrema-direita exerce para que os migrantes não tenham lugar na Europa. Muito obrigado.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Deputado, também por ter demonstrado rapidez no pouco tempo que tinha e, portanto, fica aberta também esta sessão para todos os outros grupos parlamentares, portanto, com cerca de um minuto adicional, caso pretendam usar na vossa intervenção. Vou passar ao Partido Social Democrata, Sr. Deputado Ricardo Araújo.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Presidente. Cumprimento as senhoras e os senhores deputados e um cumprimento especial, naturalmente, para o Presidente do Conselho Económico e Social Europeu, o Sr. Oliver Röpke. Agradecendo-lhe a oportunidade desta participação na reunião desta comissão, desta audiência, e agradecendo também o documento que nos disponibilizou, o manifesto para 2023-2025. Aliás, um documento que me suscitou, inclusive, a curiosidade de ir ver e consultar as últimas resoluções do Conselho Económico e Social, e chamou-me a atenção, particularmente, a resolução para o próximo mandato legislativo, Progresso Democrático da União Europeia, e também a resolução Não Deixar Ninguém para Trás, por uma política de coesão inclusiva e participativa, do ponto de vista social, económico e territorial. Estes três documentos, de alguma forma, sugerem as questões que eu gostaria de lhe colocar e que gostaria que aprofundasse na sua reflexão, que de alguma já abordou na intervenção inicial. Em primeiro lugar, o tema da participação e das prioridades para o próximo programa de trabalho da Comissão Europeia. No documento, depreende-se, consegue-se interpretar muito bem a importância que atribui à participação dos cidadãos e à participação também dos jovens, particularmente, como garantes principais do futuro da nossa União Europeia. Aliás, é dito alguns no documento que todo este processo de construção e os valores que lhes estão inerentes não são adquiridos, não são conquistas adquiridas. E é absolutamente verdade. Portanto, é necessário nós promovermos essa participação, essa cidadania ativa, como garante principal na defesa de todo este projeto de construção europeia. A segunda reflexão, e portanto gostaria que aprofundasse um bocadinho o papel também do próprio Conselho Económico-Social nesse sentido. A segunda reflexão em torno dos temas da economia. Nestes documentos, e todos sabemos, enfim, nas últimas décadas, os desafios com que a União Europeia está confrontada, particularmente nos últimos anos, desde o Covid, a guerra na Ucrânia, os desafios que se colocou do ponto de vista energético, do ponto de vista dos conflitos internacionais, da segurança, mas também ao nível da economia, particularmente com os desafios da transição digital, da construção de uma economia mais respeitadora da preocupação com a sustentabilidade ambiental, e tudo isso necessita naturalmente de um novo plano de incentivo, de incremento da nossa economia, e com particular atenção também para as pequenas e médias empresas que temos na União Europeia e, neste caso, também muito em Portugal, onde o nosso tecido industrial e económico é muito caracterizado por essas pequenas e médias empresas. E, portanto, aliás, gostaria de lhe perguntar e de lhe solicitar também alguma reflexão em torno destes desafios, da aposta na industrialização que é necessária, destes recentes relatórios, quer do Letta, quer também do relatório Draghi, para a economia e para o futuro nestas áreas da União Europeia, destacando exatamente a necessidade que ele aponta e que o Sr. Presidente também referiu na intervenção inicial, de investimento de cerca de 800 mil milhões de euros, que corresponde a cerca de 5% do PIB da União Europeia, e que retrata muito bem a diferença que nós temos em termos de produtividade. Aliás, um dos aspectos que ele destaca para a União Europeia ter mais competitividade no futuro é precisamente aumentar a produtividade das nossas empresas, evidenciando a diferença que temos na União Europeia, particularmente em relação aos Estados Unidos, que é cerca de 80% da produtividade dos Estados Unidos, e apontando a aposta na inovação, na investigação e ciência e investigação como algumas das áreas fundamentais para que a União Europeia possa precisamente obter e colocar-se no patamar da frente da competitividade. E por último, de forma muito rápida também, as políticas de coesão, que vêm também referidas aqui como uma prioridade e que o Sr. Presidente também abordou, e portanto gostaria também que nos detalhasse um bocadinho mais como vê, como considera a importância da política de coesão na União Europeia. Muito obrigado.
Obrigado, Sr. Deputado. Vou passar ao Partido Chega. Sr. Deputado António Pinto Pereira.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Presidente, Srs. Deputados. Excelentíssimo Sr. Presidente da Comissão de Assuntos Europeus, Excelentíssimo Sr. Presidente do Conselho Económico e Social Europeu, é com grande respeito que me dirijo a Vossa Excelência hoje para falar de um tema que considero particularmente relevante para o futuro da União Europeia. Refiro-me ao papel que o Conselho Económico e Social Europeu possui no âmbito da União como órgão intermediário, ou se quisermos, moderador, dos diferentes sensibilidades que existem na realidade socioeconómica europeia. Desta forma, o Conselho Económico e Social Europeu tem-se constituído, desde a sua gênese, como uma ponte vital de diálogo entre as instituições europeias e a sociedade civil, alicerçando a sua importância numa série de competências, entre as quais gostaria de salientar a representação na União Europeia de vários grupos de interesse, designadamente sindicatos, associações empresariais, organizações da sociedade civil e organizações profissionais. A emissão de pareceres sobre propostas legislativas da Comissão Europeia, que refletem as diferentes opiniões dos grupos de interesse que representam e constituem um importante input para o processo legislativo europeu. A promoção do diálogo social, que é fundamental para encontrar soluções consensuais para os desafios que a Europa enfrenta. O acompanhamento e avaliação da aplicação da legislação europeia e a cooperação com outras instituições e órgãos da União, designadamente com o Parlamento Europeu, o Conselho da União Europeia e a Comissão Europeia, para garantir que a voz da sociedade civil é ouvida no processo de tomada de decisão. Através destas ações, o Conselho Económico e Social Europeu tem garantido que as diferentes perspectivas da sociedade civil europeia são ouvidas e ficam plasmadas nas decisões tomadas pelos órgãos de poder europeus. No entanto, e como todos certamente concordaremos, o Conselho Económico e Social Europeu enfrenta hoje desafios significativos que assentam, entre outros, na crescente complexidade das políticas europeias, na globalização e na interdependência galopantes da economia mundial e da digitalização do trabalho, que exigem deste importante órgão uma adaptação constante para se manter relevante e eficaz. Neste âmbito, é crucial que a sociedade civil continue a participar ativamente no trabalho deste órgão e que as suas opiniões sejam devidamente consideradas. Necessidade que, no entanto, pode esbarrar no facto de o trabalho do Conselho Económico e Social Europeu passar muitas vezes despercebido do grande público, nascendo daqui a necessidade de ter maior visibilidade no seu trabalho e importância. É neste contexto que considero que os Parlamentos Nacionais podem ter um papel fundamental a desempenhar em articulação com o Conselho Económico e Social, seja na promoção de um diálogo mais estreito, para garantir que as preocupações dos cidadãos nacionais são devidamente transmitidas às instituições europeias, quer no apoio à implementação das recomendações dirigidas aos vários Estados-membros, quer contribuindo para aumentar a visibilidade deste órgão e para sensibilizar os cidadãos para a importância do seu trabalho. Face a este necessário e prévio enquadramento, gostaria de ouvir a vossa opinião sobre os desafios e as oportunidades que se locam ao Conselho Económico e Social Europeu, assim como sobre o papel que os Parlamentos Nacionais podem desempenhar para fortalecer este importante órgão europeu. Gostaria, em particular, de saber se o Conselho Económico e Social tem empreendido ações junto dos vários Parlamentos Nacionais, que tipo de ações, e se daí podem ser retiradas ilações para práticas e projetos futuros. E é tudo. Muito obrigado pela vossa atenção.
Obrigado a todos pela vossa colaboração, impecáveis no governamento dos tempos, enfim, com este pequeno tempo extra, mas, mesmo assim, ainda teríamos mais grupos parlamentares que também nos dão aqui um bocadinho mais de espaço. Vou passar a palavra ao Sr. Oliver Robb para responder às questões que lhe foram colocadas pelos seus deputados. Tem a palavra.
Yes. Thank you very much for the comments and for the positive comments and also for the questions. I would like to try to treat them in chronological order. So I would like to start with Ms. Antunes and I think Mr. Popiescu. Pardon. Yeah, I think it went a bit in the same direction, the question. So you mentioned again that democracy and especially the treatment of minorities is fundamental. And I think this is something where our committee was always and has been always in the forefront to make sure that fundamental rights also of minorities or vulnerable groups must be ensured. And this is definitely something, I mentioned it before, which is in our focus in our fundamental rights group, but we have also dedicated bodies for the rights of disabled people, for Roma people, and for other vulnerable groups. So this is something which is high on our agenda. Just in the last plenary session, we had a debate with the Hungarian presidency, even with the state secretary from Hungary, who is himself disabled, on a strategy for disabled people in Europe. So this is definitely something where our committee will always be in the forefront and never never let this down. We can see that we have more and more threats to fundamental rights, and not only we have it globally, but we can see it more and more also in the European Union. Not, there is not one country which is immune against this. We can see this now in the elections in several countries. So I think it is important that civil society and social partners are really vocal and do not compromise on this, even if we have elections which are election results which are challenging for pro-European democratic forces. But I insist that we cannot compromise on these fundamental rights, and I think the rights of minorities are here in the forefront. You mentioned what I said also at the beginning, the future of the European pillar of social rights. And I think this is really important, since this pillar was really a game changer from my point of view, and not only from a trade union's perspective. I think for the credibility of Europe, that Europe, and it was by the way, it was Jean-Claude Juncker, Christian Democrat, who said years ago there is a lack of balance in social justice in Europe, and he was the one who was a promoter together with the Swedish Prime Minister Stefan Löfven at this time to promote this European pillar of social rights. I have to say, I think it was a great success, because this pillar is a non-binding document. So even in my organization, many people said, well, why we need another non-binding document? We have already so many documents at European level. But I think Europe took it seriously and really implemented step by step many of the principles of the European pillar of social rights. And as I said before, I share your concerns that for the future there are some doubts that we will continue to implement the pillar. And I think we have still fields where we need to be active. I just mentioned artificial intelligence. I think artificial intelligence and the world of labor, here we need some regulation to make sure that this is used in a social, in a just manner. And I know that the commissioner would like to propose something, and I hope that the future commissioner, Ms. Mintzatu, will do this. There are in the mission letter, so in the mandate for this new commissioner, there are only a very few concrete initiatives. And the most important one is to have a new action plan on the implementation of the pillar. And I think this is really decisive and crucial, that this action plan must be ambitious and must also entail some concrete initiatives that should be taken in the next during the next mandate. And we should also look in the implementation of existing regulations and directives, because I just would like to remind all of us that Europe has adopted this minimum wage directive, which actually is not only aiming at increasing minimum wages, it's first of all aiming at strengthening social dialogue between the social partners and collective bargaining. And as I said before, I think here also Europe must insist that this is really implemented in many countries. And I think, or we will at least, we will follow up on this and we'll make sure that there will be in the countries different models. There's not one size fits all, different models to increase collective bargaining. I think this is, in the end, a successful model for both, for business and for trade unions, if we have really a partnership and if we regulate working conditions by collective agreement. So, yeah, I think it is important, and you mentioned also there's only one single commissioner for social affairs. Yes, it's true, but there are also some points, for example, when it comes to housing, also the commissioner responsible for social affairs should contribute to this action plan or strategy for affordable housing. So I think we have some possibilities, but I agree with you, we need really more concrete initiatives, and I think this action plan would be extremely important. I hope, but this is of course not my decision, if we have another social forum. It was always in Porto the last two times, so I think it was a good tradition in Portugal. I hope that we will continue with this tradition. The question of inequalities, yes, and the role of migrants. This is also something which is close to our heart. We have a lot of proposals also for for the field of tax policies to reduce inequalities in Europe, and we are also pushing for a new migration policy. We have in the end we were quite critical with the new migration pact, but since we have it, we think it should be implemented as soon as possible. Because I'm personally am very, very worried when I see now that each and every country takes its individual approach. I mean, I'm quite familiar with the situation in Germany, and we could see that now the question of migration is very high on the agenda, let's say it like this. And if this leads to the end of the Schengen project, and Germany now starts with border controls for all borders, to all its neighboring countries, I think if we go this way, then we really put the whole concept of Europe and of free movement of Europe into question. So I think this is one reason why we have to implement this migration pact as soon as possible to make sure that we have more common migration policy and not beggar your neighbor approach that each country is dealing with this on its own. I think we need to implement this migration pact as soon as possible. And when it comes to the role of migrants, I fully agree with you. Even if there, in some countries, there is a problem with, let's say, not controlled migration, this is definitely the case. But on the other hand side, we could see that many sectors in almost all countries could not work without migrants. Everybody knows it. We just have to go to the hospitals. Without migrants, our economy would really have a serious problem. So I think we should put more emphasis on the integration, on skilling of these people and to integrate them. Because in the end, I think too often we have the negative effects of migration on the screen, but not actually the big success and the contribution of migrants to our well-being and our and economic well and social well-being. Then Mr. Araujo, thank you also for your question, and it's true what you said. I was really glad about this question because participation is of course one of my and of our main priorities. We always think that our committee is never in competition to the parliament. I mean, we are not the decision makers. We are only an advisory body, we know this, and we don't claim that everybody has to follow our recommendations. But I think for a vibrant democracy, it's important to have dialogue and participation. This is actually the key, and therefore I'm quite glad that we follow this path now. We are more impactful, and we are also heard by the European Commission. As I said, we are involved in different policy areas. I think this is absolutely important. What is also maybe what I should mention, we have also responsibility as social partners and civil society, because if we want to have influence, then we need to speak with one voice. Because there's a bit the trend that we just duplicate the positions of the social partners, of ETUC, the trade union, Business Europe, of business. If it comes to this, that both of them, they just stick to their positions, then we don't need our body. The idea is actually to have compromises and to have really a big, as much as possible, big consensus on the way forward. It doesn't work always. For example, on the question of minimum wage, we had a counter opinion, so we couldn't find one single voice. But in most of the opinions, we adopt them with more than 90% support. And I think this is important to have really impact, and we try to have this consensus as much as possible. You ask about citizens' participation. This is also very important. Here we are. We started this year with the so-called Civil Society Week. 1 week with different initiatives where we invited, I think, more than 200 representatives from civil society and citizens, and they debated key policy areas and recommendations. So we took some of them on board in our resolution, because once again, we also told the citizens, if you debate your demands, there's no guarantee that we will take it on board, because there's no I would say there's no obligation, but we discuss it. We discuss it. This is, for me, participatory democracy. So we are not there yet where I want us to be. So we want to set up citizens' panels really in a more regular way. But we're working on this, and I'm quite confident that next year we will also have citizens' panels for important decisions of the European Commission, either for the work program or for some, let's say, some key initiatives like housing. I think housing would be a good topic where we could use also the view of citizens. So we will use this, and as you mentioned, young people as well. Here we are already on track, and we have the young people on board, youth organizations on board in a very systematic way in our committee. The question of SMEs and cohesion, this is something which is really close to us, I have to say. We have an own interest group in our house for the small and medium-sized enterprises. And they come not only from the employers, also from the Group 3. So from the, for example, social economy plays also a very big role. I think here we made also some progress in the last years with an own action plan to make sure that the access to finance will be guaranteed, because we can see that this is often an obstacle for social economy and for SMEs, that they don't have the access to finance. So to find an ecosystem, financial ecosystem, I think this is of utmost importance. And even if I'm a trade unionist, I also take note that many of the SMEs say that they have to struggle with too much bureaucratic burdens. So, well, we are open. If we find solutions to make this easier, then I will definitely not be against it. For me, the red line is where we say, well, social protection or social rights are per se an bureaucratic burden. This I would not accept. I would say we have some rules basic rules for social Europe, and I think they should be respected from all companies. But I know that there is, when it comes to reporting, for example, there is space to make this easier. And I think the Letta report and the Draghi report, they go also in this direction. And we are currently working on an opinion with concrete proposals to implement Draghi and Letta report. And Enrico Letta was twice in our committee, and he is very keen to work with us also on the implementation, because too often we have these reports, we highlight them, we appreciate them, and then they are forgotten afterwards. So I think we should have really a structured implementation procedure, and we are ready to help here and to facilitate this. Yeah, cohesion policy, what I said at the beginning, this is, even when I come from Austria, where we also use cohesion policy and cohesion money, because we have some regions which are a bit underdeveloped, but I think this is, once again, this is a key investment policy, key investment instrument for Europe. So there was a risk that this instrument would be undermined. There was the idea to have cohesion policy not as a single portfolio, but to use it more as an instrument for urgent crisis, like the EU, the reaction to the pandemic, for example. I think this is not acceptable. We need a structured cohesion policy also for the future to make sure that we have more convergence in Europe. And I myself, I had the opportunity some weeks ago or a month ago to travel to Figueira de Vinhos. Yeah, it's a small community very small, but they invited me for their municipality day, and I could visit also cohesion policy, what the effects and the results of cohesion policy in these regions, and I think we have to continue this. So I wrote also a letter to Ursula von der Leyen together with Vasco Cordero, the president of the Committee of Regions, and we insisted on the function of cohesion policy, and she assured us that this will stay, that this will stay as a really strong pillar of European policy, and we will work on this. I think also for future enlargement, cohesion policy will play a crucial role. Here we have really the risk that cohesion or candidate countries will be played against member states, and I think this we should really avoid. We need We need more financing for the future, this is clear, but we have to prepare the candidate countries better also for future membership, and cohesion policy will play a crucial role here. Yeah, and then to the last question that came from Mr. Pereira. Thank you for the questions, and I found it quite constructive, I have to say, and I will be very open with you, because I'm open always for dialogue with all political groups when we share a democratic consensus. And I have to say, I hope that with the new parliament we can work with the different groups, because we had some groups, I will say it politely, who were calling to abolish our committee. And I think we can face criticism, and I'm always open to discuss this, but I think we should really not make the mistake to abolish bodies that represent civil society and, I think, important interests from businesses and from unions. And therefore, I appreciate a constructive approach, because we had resolutions in the European Parliament supported by some minor groups really calling to abolish our committee. And I, once again, I would say this would be alarming. But you clearly mentioned that dialogue is important. I agree with this. And I think you ask explicitly for the role of the European Parliament and how they consider or implement or involve our work. Here I have to say it depends very much on the individual member of European Parliament. But in general, I think we have really a good cooperation with them. We are invited from most of the committees in their committee meetings, where we can even present our opinions. And I have to say, now at the beginning of the mandate, I was really surprised that many members of European Parliament reached out to us and asked us and myself for meetings. So most of the committee chairs, for example, asked me to have meetings to see where we have room for structured cooperation. So I have to say I cannot complain. Also, the president of the European Parliament, Roberta Metsola, is very keen to involve civil society. And maybe as an example, the first plenary session of our House after the European elections, we invited a couple of European members of European Parliament, including Roberta Metsola. They all came, and we had a very lively debate with our members. I think it was a good start to really join forces with them. And I would also say that also with national parliaments, because you asked for this, I'm grateful for this opportunity here. Also, the French National Assembly invited me, and I have also contacts to other national parliaments. But our main role was actually to support the European elections, not to support specific parties necessarily, but to have initiatives to, to activate civil society to reach out for the European elections. And I think in the end, the participation rate was much higher than in the years before. So I think to a certain extent, it was successful, I would say. So this was, that was my reply. Thank you very much for all the questions. It was very interesting. And once again, I appreciate very much, very much, your willingness and to discuss this and to engage with the European Economic and Social Committee. So thank you very much for this.
Creio que as questões que foram levantadas e que o Sr. Presidente do Conselho Económico e Social Europeu respondeu dariam para muito mais tempo. São de facto cruciais e de alguma maneira os seus deputados levantaram aqui muitas das questões essenciais. Nós vemos a questão da competitividade sem estar desligada da coesão social. Parece-nos que são as duas grandes pernas do modelo europeu e teremos que continuar a caminhar nesse sentido. Agradeço-lhe muito outra vez a sua vinda. Foi para nós muito, muito bom e também creio que saímos muito motivados a continuar a olhar com mais atenção depois de o ouvir e de ter a sua visão e também a informação sobre o trabalho de um órgão tão importante como o que o senhor dirige. Muito obrigado uma vez mais, espero que a sua estadia em Portugal corra bem. Gostamos muito de o cá ter e, acima de tudo, de o ter tido aqui neste Parlamento, onde será sempre bem-vindo, e oxalá no futuro possamos ter também mais oportunidades de nos reencontrarmos e de continuarmos a discutir esta agenda, sem nunca perder de vista o trabalho do vosso organismo, que é, como disse, muito importante e muito decisivo nos nossos. Muito obrigado, um bom dia a todos. Deixo desde já um convite para quem quiser ficar na reunião com a senhora embaixadora da Ucrânia, que irá ter lugar ao meio-dia. Será também uma honra poder contar com a vossa companhia. Certamente também teremos muito interesse em acompanhar esse dossiê. Muito obrigado. E convido os senhores deputados para tirarmos uma fotografia com o senhor Oliver Hope aqui connosco, para, no fundo, imortalizarmos esta reunião. Vamos tirar aqui uma foto nesta bela sala do nosso Parlamento.